so they're just going to deal with the stupid people.
There you go. Right, people who don't know how to make friends with them. All right, so sorry for the slightly delayed start, everybody. I was erasing the previous lectures to make room for today. Welcome back. There's a couple things I'd like to do. The first thing I want to do is, you may recall in the beginning of class last time, we brainstormed a little bit about a word that Google would not know, that would be on no web pages that Google had indexed, and we came up with one, but I actually ended up checking out two. So there are two different words, and let's just quickly visit Google and make sure that they are, in fact, not being returned as answers. So if we go to the class web page, I've got this little thing at the bottom, this little link called How Does Google Find Stuff? And it has, on that page, has on it the word, how is it pronounced? Gieselrub? Gieselrub? I think it was Gieselrub. And so it's right there on the page, a perfectly reasonable thing that you could have a hit on. And yet, when we search in Google for that, it says, does not match any documents. How rude, when in fact we know there's a document that has it. I just showed it to you. So that's one thing I wanted to point out. Another thing to point out is I also have another page that has no links to it. So I will take you to that page, but there's no way to get there by clicking. You have to actually just type in the URL. That page has on it Gieselrub, the J Gieselrub. And if we go into Google and search for that, that also has no hits. So we're going to check in on this again next week. But as things stand, Google has no idea that these are actual real words that we made up. All right, so that was one thing I wanted to show you. The next thing I want to show you is for the next homework, you're going to interact with a demo program that Sergio wrote. Actually, he wrote one of them. There was also one that was written last year by the TA, R.E. Weinstein. And let me take you to that. All right, so here's the game. Can you see, everybody see this? There are 16 friendly faces, little South Park looking characters that were generated. There's a website, I don't know if you've ever gone there. There's a website where you can click on different choices and it creates something that looks like it came from South Park.
I've been there.
You've been there, all right. In fact, I believe that might be you. Each of them have a number of different features that we could use to describe them. They have a hair color, a body color, glove color, and a leg color. And in case you're either colorblind or it's a little hard to tell in some of the cases, we wrote what the values are for each of them underneath. So, for example, the guy in the very first guy in the upper left, who looks a little tweakish, I guess, he's got brown hair, green body, green gloves, and green legs. That's what the BGGG is, okay? And now we're going to play a game with the computer. And we play this game using Boolean expressions, because how else would you play it? Where what we have to do is the computer's thinking of one of the characters in the array, and we have to guess which one by asking yes-no questions in the form of Boolean expressions. So we can only ask questions about those four features, because those are the only four features that the computer knows about. If you'll notice, every one of the characters has a different pattern on those features. Okay? So that you can tell them all apart just by asking questions about those particular features. So we might ask a question like, well, is the person you're thinking of, computer, someone with blonde hair? Okay? So, basically are we saying, is it this guy or this guy or this guy or this guy? And we can say that by, say, making a logical expression that says, blonde hair. So blonde hair is something that's either true or false of each of these characters. So let's try. Let's ask, does it have blonde hair? We click on evaluate logic built by select boxes, and it says false. In other words, it's saying the person I'm thinking of does not have blonde hair. So we can say, well, does the person not have red hair? Or let's say, does not have a red body. All right? So this is a logical expression that's true of any of the characters that do not have a red body. So they either have a green body or, I guess, a blue body. All right? So we can say, okay, does it not have a red body? It says, true, in other words, it's something other than a red body. It's either green or blue. And you can see over on the right, it's being really helpful by Xing out all the characters that don't match the expressions that we've had so far. We asked blonde hair, it said false, so that means that everybody with blonde hair is out. They can't possibly be thinking of someone with blonde hair. We asked not red body, and it said true, so it's only going to leave characters that have not red body, so either blue or green. So give me another question that I can ask. What would you? It's one of these guys that are not X'd out, and we have to figure out which one. So what should we ask?
Green gloves.
Green gloves? Not green gloves?
Green body.
Green gloves or green body? We'll just ask green gloves and see what happens. So it said no. In other words, the person does not have green gloves. So that leaves one, two, three, these four characters. I heard black hair. Is that a good question to ask at this point? We're trying to ask as few questions as possible.
Red hair.
Red hair. But red hair and black hair are basically the same question, right?
Red hair, not red gloves.
Red hair, blue body.
Red hair and blue body? So that would give us these two guys, right? So let's try that. We can have a multi-part expression here. We say, does the person have red hair and, this is the Boolean and that we've been talking about, and a blue body? All right, so that's something that would be true for this gal and true for this Mohawk guy, but not true for these two folks. Okay, so let's see what the answer is. The answer was true, so all that's left of these two. So now that we should easily be able to get it in one question.
Blue gloves.
All right, so blue gloves. Luke gloves. All right, so blue gloves, the answer is false, so it has to be her. We did it! We did it in 5 guesses. 5 guesses is not bad, but it's not the best you can do. You can use a strategy that actually guarantees that you'll never do worse than 4 guesses. But I will, and the homework question will be basically for you to find that strategy. But let's, any questions on this? We're going to now look at the flip side, where we get to ask, it's going to ask the questions and we get to answer. All right? So if we're done with this one, so what you'll see on the website, there is this link. It's all written in JavaScript, which all web browsers ought to be able to run. So it should be the case that if you just go to this page, it should just work for you. I've been wrong before, but that it really should work. All right, so now let's play the other side of the game. Guess who? Guesser. All right, so now we pick a character. The computer is going to ask us questions in the form of Boolean expressions, Boolean algebra expressions, and we have to answer true or false to determine, to give it information about which character is our character, and it's going to try to do the best that it can. In fact, it has two modes that it can play in, one where it plays optimally, and one where it's the expressions are more interesting to evaluate. So we're going to play it that way. So ready? So first thing we should probably do is pick a character. So who do we like?
One.
What'd you say?
The
wild one with the red hair. Oh, this here, like the fiery red hair on the bottom?
No. Upper one.
The really wild red hair. That's more or less what my hair looked like. Not color-wise, but over the summer I had much more spiky hair. All right, so we're saying this dude here, the computer's going to ask us questions, and we have to answer from the perspective of this dude being the one that we're thinking of. All right, so go, computer, go. The computer asked the following. You ready? Does the person you're thinking of have a red body or both blue gloves and red gloves? That's a horrible question. Why? It can't be true. Nobody can have blue gloves and red gloves, at least none of the characters that we have here. So this is going to be false. And the computer just wasted a question on us.
True or false and false become true or false, which is true.
Crap, I don't know how to go back. All right, I'm sorry about that. That's a different question. All right, does anyone want to explain that, or should we just move on? So that was a great teaching moment, and I blew it, and I apologize for that. Yeah.
Well, if a person has what says up there, it's true. Like, for example, if a person has blonde hair, it's true, but that red glove, the dog red glove, that's false, they don't have blue legs, that's false also. What it becomes is not false, which is true, then becomes false, and false, which is false, and because they have blonde hair, true or false, which is true.
I'm going to say thank you.
Should I write this down?
But here's what I would like to start with. Can anybody remember what the expression was? It was something or...
Red body. Or red gloves.
Red body or red gloves and
blue gloves.
All right, so here's what I just did. Yeah, I can see how I screwed up. Apart from having the worst handwriting in the room. So this is always false. But the whole expression is red body or that. And the person we were thinking of has a red body, so I should have said true. But I got distracted by the fact that this part is actually completely ignorable. This, no matter who we pick, this part is going to be false. So really, this whole expression is equal to red body or false. And or has the property that whenever you or something with false, it doesn't change its value. If this is true, true or false is true. If this is false, false or false is false. So this really, the question that the computer actually asked us, more confusingly than necessary, was, does the person have a red body? And I answered it wrong. So we're going to try again. All right, so this time let's think a little harder. Oops. No, you guys thought fine. This time let me think a little harder. So now the question is, does the person you're thinking of have red hair? No, sorry. Blonde hair. That's false. Or both red gloves and not blue legs. So we're looking at this guy. I was looking at her for a second. Our guy has, does he have red gloves? No. Does he have not blue legs? No. So does he have both red gloves and not blue legs? No. Does he have blonde hair or no? No. So no. So false. This time I'm going to pause before clicking.
Yeah.
We all agree that it's false?
Yes.
Okay, so we say no. The computer now helpfully applies that information to the whole screen. You can see this one got crossed out because she actually had blonde hair or red gloves and not blue legs. Right? She didn't have blonde hair, but she did have both red gloves and not blue legs. So blonde hair or red gloves and not blue legs is false for this. Oh, sorry, it's true for this character, and therefore it can't be her. So there's still a couple possibilities. The computer had another question for us. Does the person we're thinking of have green legs or not blue legs? In other words, does the person have red legs? And the answer is no.
False.
So we'll say false to that one. Does the person have a red body? I think the answer is yes. Body is the second letter. So the answer is true for that one. Okay? That's an easy one. That's a logical expression, a Boolean algebra expression. It's just a really easy one, right? It doesn't have any ands, ors, and nots in it, but it does have that one Boolean variable. And the answer is true. It does, in fact, have a red body. All right, so there's three left. The computer's whittled it down to three possibilities and then asks us this winner of a question. Does the person have not black hair or not green body and red hair? So does it have not green body? Yes. And red hair? Yes. Does it have not black hair or that? Yes. So I'm thinking true. Does that make sense to everybody? The person we're thinking of, this fiery-headed man, young man, has, in fact, not black hair. Has red hair. So actually, we can ignore the rest of this expression because the first part is true. True or anything is true. So the answer is true. Wow. But that was false for the other two guys. This was the only one it was true for, so the computer did it. The computer got our guy in four moves, which is actually pretty good, considering some of the questions seem kind of dopey. All right, do you guys get that? So I'm thinking that in this setting, the and ors and nots maybe make more sense to everybody, that it's clear what's being asked. You know, we have a particular situation, which is one of the guys or gals in the grid, and we're asking questions like, well, is this the kind of person who does this or that? Is this the kind of person who has this and that? And or, that's what and or mean in the logical sense. I think it's pretty direct. So by playing with this a little bit, practicing, I think if you're having any lingering questions about, wait, why is true and false? What does that mean? I think the meaning of and or, true and false, will be clearer to you when you play this for a little bit. So that's why we made it. Any other questions about this? I don't know exactly what the homework question on this demo will be. The other one will be to get a strategy that takes four moves. But this one, I'm not sure. So I'll think of something. It might just be that you have to play a couple games with it. See if you can get it to take more than four moves. Alrighty. Any other questions or clarification before we dive in? The next thing is to do a couple clicker questions, and then we'll pick up with the lecture and talk about finite state machines. Christmas lights. It's not quite the right time of year for that, but is it ever the wrong time of year for Christmas lights? Okay, maybe. But all right, no other questions or comments? Then we'll push on. All right, so two times ago we talked about converting numbers back and forth between binary and decimal. Let's just make sure that you get it. I will get the clicker thing going, but you can start looking at this. The question is, the decimal number 19 in binary is a 1 space 1111111111. Choice B is 0001 0011. Choice C is 0001 space 1001. Choice D is 11001000. And choice E is 11101101. So you might need a piece of paper to work that out. And in the meantime, I will get the clicker. Don't click quite yet, because I don't have it running yet. Oh, I took away your choices. It's 19 that you're converting. All right. Woo. Is that actually us? I guess it's hard to tell. Oh yeah. I think that's us. Yeah, we are that good. Alright, so anyone need a few more seconds? No one ever seems to wave me off when I say I'm going to stop. Does that mean that you don't hear the question, or are you ready for me to stop? Okay, I'm just going to stop. Stopping in 3, 2, 1. Stopping. And we get... Woo! Oh, yeah. So, yes, this is 19. 116 plus 2 and 1. 16 plus 2 plus 1 is 19. Well done. So you didn't get fooled by this one, which is a 1 followed by 1 not, so 9 ones. This one, which is the right answer. This one, which is a 1 in binary, followed by a 9 in binary. This is actually called, by the way, binary coded decimal. So some computers actually work with number systems where groups of 4 bits are decimal digits. So to make a 19, you make a 1 in 4 bits, and then you make a 9 in the other 4 bits. It's a little easier for people to read, but it's a little harder for computers to work with. This is 19 backwards, and this one, I don't know what that is. Just to confuse you. All right. Very good. All right, that's very reassuring that seems to be working out okay. Let's do an addition problem. So we've got 1 0 1 0 1 1 0 0, an 8-bit number, plus 0 0 1 1 1 1 0 1, and the choices are 1 0 0 1 0 1 1 1. Choice B is 8 ones in a row. Choice C is 1 0 0 1 0 0 0 1. Choice D is 1 0 1 1 1 1 0 1. And choice E is 1 1 1 0 1 0 0 1. If there's overflow, include the 9 bits. But none of the choices have 9 bits, so that shouldn't be an option. All right, another 6 seconds. No, a little more time? Who needs more time? Okay, at least a hand went up that time. Okay, good. 3, 2.
Hey.
Wait.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't see your hand, sorry.
Good, sorry.
You good?
Yeah.
Good. Awesome. All right, stopping. Ta-da. That's pretty good on E. That's the right answer. If you didn't get that and have questions, send me an email or something, but I won't go over it right now because it seems like it would be reviewed for almost everybody. Oh, sure. Let's do a subtraction problem and then we're done for now. So we also looked at subtraction last time. This is 101011 00 minus 00111101 is the answer. 110111 B 111 C 111101 D this looks like 9 bits 10110111 or E 111010001. Nah, I can't do it like that. Alright, it's been a couple minutes. little more time? Okay, thank you. Get as close as possible. If you're making progress, if you're stalled, then we should just go on. Okay. All right, so I'm going to call it 5, 4. Click in if you don't have anything. 3, 2, 1. Stop it. All right, this one I think was harder than the addition problem. And if you look, more than half of people said A. But there's, you know, substantial support for some of the other answers as well, including some that are clearly not right. But that's okay, because it took me 2 tries just now to get this, because I started to lose bits in various places. So let's try this out. So we've got, I drew little lines here to keep the place values straight, because that was where I screwed up when I was doing it myself. 0 minus 1 is a bit problematic. We need to borrow from someplace else. So what we're going to do is we're going to borrow from this guy, make it a 0, and give to this guy, make it a 1. Now we can borrow from this guy, making it a 0, and give to this guy, making it a 1. No.
That's right.
This was a, oh, it went, oh, good point. Yes, we borrowed from this guy, made it a 2. It's not, it wasn't the 0 went away. We actually donated 2 from this guy and gave it to this one. So this went from 0 to being 2. Just like when we were doing it with decimal. So, all right, so the first step, let's back off again. We're trying to subtract this 1 from a 0. This guy needs to be bigger than 0 so we can borrow from it. So we're going to go 1 out beyond that. This is the 4's place, right? In binary, this is the 4's place. So we're going to take 4 away, turn this into a 0. And give 2 2's, that's also 4. So we've just moved some of the value around. And to turn this 0 into a 2, 1 0. So we borrow from this and make it 1 0. Now we can borrow from this guy, this 1 0, we can bring it down from 2 to 1 and up that one up to 2. So this is now 2 minus 1 is 1. This, it had been a bunch of different things, but it's now 1 minus 0 is 1. This one had already donated its life force to some other bit position. So this is a 0 now. We can't subtract 1 from it. So we're going to have to go a borrowing again. So again, we're going to take away from this guy, take it down from 1 to 0, and then donate that. In this place value, that's 2. So this is now 2 in this place. So 2 minus 1 is 1. Now we've got 1 that we're taking away from 0, which is problematic. So we're going to go out and borrow from here. Turn this one into a 0, turn this one into a 2. Now we can borrow from this 2, so we'll take this down from 2 to 1 and borrow that up to there. So this is now 2 minus 1 is 1. This is a 1 minus 1 is 0. A 0 minus 1, oy, there's always more borrowing. All right, so we're going to take away from this guy, turn it down to a 0, up this to a 2. Now we can borrow from the 2, make it a 1, make that guy a 2. 2 minus 1 is 1, 1 minus 0 is 1, 0 minus 0 is 0, which we don't have to write. So we get 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, which is choice the, up there. Yeah. Oh, scratching. Sorry. All right. All right. Yes.
I tried doing the 2's complement for that.
Oh, okay.
And wound up getting answer D.
Answer B?
D.
D. Yeah, but so, okay, but if you, that's probably why it's up there. So when you do 2's complement, you have to allow the overflow to go away. So you see choice D is a 9-bit answer. 2's complement, you have to stay with a fixed number of bits. So it's an 8-bit minus another 8-bit, and the answer has to be 8-bit. So that leading 1, you have to throw it away. And if you look, well, what do you get when you throw that away? You get 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, which was choice A. So you got the right answer, you just forgot to throw away that leading bit. Okay? It's good to know that works, though.
Excellent.
All right. Yeah, the subtraction tends to be a bit more of a stumper than the others. Okay. All right. So I'm going to mention multiplication. I don't even think I'm going to mention division, but I'll mention multiplication. Multiplication in base 2 is very pretty and very natural and very easy. And it's a shame that we have to learn to multiply in base 10 because you have to learn these big multiplication tables. Let me write the multiplication table for base 2 on the board so you can get an appreciation of what you could have had. So when you make your multiplication tables in base 10, you write like 0 through 9 times 0 through 9 and you fill it in, you know, what's the row times the column. In binary, we only have 0 and 1. So we fill it in, 0 times 0 is 0, 0 times 1 is 0, 0 times 1 is 0, and 1 times 1 is 1. That's all you have to memorize if you're multiplying in binary. Like, do you remember what 7 times 8 is? I always get stumped by that. But there's nothing like that here. It's so easy. It's so sad that we have so many fingers. I could do a little multiplication problem for you. It turns out it's only, all you have to do is shift and add. There's no, because it's all these zeros and ones, there's no, nothing else happens. You take the first number and you keep adding it to itself with different amounts of shift. And so it turns out to be really easy and really fast. But you do have to add a lot of times. Just like in multiplace multiplication in decimal, you know, you get number times a number, and then you get a whole bunch of rows of number that you have to all add up. So the same thing happens in binary. You get a whole bunch of binary numbers that are piled up on the bottom that you have to add all up. And that's a bit of a pain. But the multiplication part is just really easy. Okay, so here's an example, just so you can see what it looks like. So what's neat about this is, look what we're doing here. We're multiplying. Now would be a good time to have a really long pointer. So what you can see here, that's not going to work. All right, so what you can see is that, look at the first bit pattern times the second bit pattern. What we then do is we copy that first bit pattern. Well, so just do it like regular multiplication, right? So the first thing you do is you multiply by the bottom right digit of the second number, right? But that's a 1. What's that first number times 1? It's that number all over again. So you just write it out. Now we move on to the second place. That's another 1. So again, it's just the first number copied down, but now shifted over one position, right? Because we're multiplying it by the 1 that's in the 2's place. There's 0 in the 4's place, so you don't do anything. It's just 0. 0 in the 8's place, and then a 1 in the 16's place. Well, that's just 1 times the first number shifted over so that it goes into the 16's place. So you can see it's just that the first number times the second number, we've just repeated the first number 4 times, once for each bit position in the second number that's on. Then you add them all up and you get the answer. So the adding, there's more sophisticated carrying you have to do in binary, which can be a bit of a pain. But we can always add them in pairs because we know how to add two binary numbers together. So you just do that once, twice, 3 times and you're done. And that's the answer that you get. I'm not going to ask you more about this, but I just wanted to give you some appreciation for when computers are multiplying big numbers together, they're doing this very, very simple thing of just adding a copy of the first number over and over again. Yes?
Why did you go to the 16th place?
So think about it, if we were multiplying these in decimal, it would look exactly the same if we were multiplying decimal numbers. So let's multiply, 453 times 101. So what does this look like? 1 times 3 is 3, 1 times 5 is 5, 1 times 4 is 4. It's just the 453 copied again, right? Then we have 0 times all this, which is 0. Then we have, right, this is how you, I don't know how you like to write your multiplication. There's like a kind of an implied 0 that you put over here. And then when you do this digit, there's kind of 2 implied zeros. And now we do again. 1 times 3 is 3, 1 times 5 is 5. 1 times 4 is 4. And then the answer ends up being 3, 5, 7, 5,
4. Add them together. So you can see what this is. This is 453 in the ones position and 453 in the hundreds position. And that's exactly what's going on there. That each place there's a 1 in the second number we're multiplying, we get a copy of the first number, shift it over to the appropriate place. I just didn't write any of the zero lines because they're just zeros anyway. You can do long division. I actually don't know how computers generally do long division. I'm not sure how we do it in decimal either, frankly, but it usually works out. So long division is another important operation that computer chips are hard-coded into computer chips. There's another one which is, if you have a binary pattern and another binary pattern, doing the OR of all the bits in their place values turns out to be really useful. That's called a bitwise logical OR. There's also bitwise logical AND. What is a bitwise logical NOT? What does it mean to take a pattern of bits and apply the NOT operator to each of the bits? What do you get? I gave a name to this last time, so you might remember it. The opposite, I heard? It's not. That's a good description. What did you say? Oh, I thought I heard it. Oh, thank you. No, not that kind of complement. Yeah, right, it's called the complement. You take all the zeros and turn them to ones, and all the ones and turn them to zeros. And so bitwise, logical, NOT just takes the complement of it. If you took a binary pattern, did the logical NOT, and added 1 to the answer, what do you get? We had a name for this last time also. Who is the guy who was using it for the subtraction problem? Two's complement. That's what 2's complement is. So logical NOT, bitwise logical NOT is really useful and really easy to implement. Now keep in mind that what's going on when we sometimes people say that bits are numbers, but they're really just patterns of true and false that can be used to represent numbers in, for example, the binary scheme. But the way that I describe binary doesn't let you do fractions, doesn't let you do, you know, decimals in the sense of point, blah, 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 blah. You know, numbers between 0 and 1. Doesn't let you do negatives, really, except for kind of in that fake way in 2's complement. So there are ways that you have to add to this expressive power of bit patterns to interpret them as negative numbers and other kinds of large numbers. So sometimes a negative number can be represented in 2's complement. Sometimes what they'll do is they'll take, there's one bit, which is called the sign bit, which is 0 if the number is positive and 1 if it's negative, and then the rest of the bits represent whatever number. So that's one way to represent negatives. You can represent fixed width fractions, like, you know how, like in dollars, you've got $2.53, 2.53. If you don't have the ability to represent fractional numbers, well, just get rid of the decimal point. Just say 2.53, and keep in mind that you're always talking about cents instead of dollars. So fixed width fractions, you can represent just with the same kind of scheme that we've been talking about. You just have to remember to move the decimal point over. Floating point representation. So I don't know if you remember exponential notation, where you can represent a number like a times 10 to the b. If you've got a big number like 17 trillion, you might represent it as 1.7 times 10 to the whatever gets you trillion, 12? All right. So if you want to represent numbers like that, then in the computer you end up having two bit patterns, one that represents the number that stands for the a, and one that represents the number that stands for the b. So that's generally how they do that. If you know about complex numbers, like numbers that have I in it, you separately represent the real and the imaginary parts. They're just bits. So computer designers can use these bit patterns however they think would make it easier for them to do the things they want their computer to do. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. So if I show you a pattern like this, you know, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, and ask you what this is, if you interpret it as a regular base 2 number, that's fine, but if I don't, you don't know, this could be the letter P, right? This could be anything. I can decide when I build the computer how I'm connecting patterns of bits to things in the world, things that I want to represent. They're just patterns. So, but binary base 2 is one of the most common patterns, and it turns out to be really useful. Alright, so here's where we are. We talked a little bit about using logic gates that take sets of input values, trues and falses, and turn them into sets of output values, like an equal gate or a
what else did we talk about? Equal gates and if-then-else gates. Right? These are different things that we can build out of ands and ors and nots that take patterns of bits and create other patterns of bits. But if that's all computers were, like a big machine that you put bits in, it did something to them and then bits came out, that would be really boring because they would just do their thing, they'd give their output, and then they wouldn't be able to interact with you, they wouldn't be able to do lots of things. So things get interesting. Computers get useful when what you do is the bits that come out, feed them back in as input in the next time step and iterate this. Just keep cycling through the pattern of bits getting transformed into other bits. Bits getting transformed into other bits. And that's, instead of just being logic gates, this is what's called a state machine. This is something that converts bits into other bits, but then keeps cycling them through to get more and more patterns. A sequence of patterns over time is a state machine. So essentially, all a computer is a very fancy state machine. But you probably don't have much of a sense of what a state machine is like at this point. So what I'd like to do is step you through a much simpler state machine that's not as complicated as a full computer, but does something that that I hope you'll be able to appreciate, but really uses all the same parts as a computer. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to create blinking Christmas lights. They're going to blink once per second in some pattern. I think there's going to be 8 lights. But let's start off with just one light. So let old light be a Boolean variable that represents whether the light was on 1 second ago, and new light to be another Boolean variable that tells it whether or not to turn the light on right now. So if we want the light to blink, what kind of Boolean operation do we want to do? We want new light to be some function of what the light was a second ago. So what should that function be? Yeah, go ahead. It's not, right? New light equals not old light. That's what blinking is in a nutshell, right? Take whatever was going on a second ago and do the opposite. So if it was off, turn on. If it was on, turn off. That's blinking. So let's look at this. So we want something that looks like this. We want some kind of a logical function that takes in whatever the light used to be, puts out whatever the light should be now, and it should follow this very simple truth table. When old light is false, new light should be true. When old light is true, new light should be false. Old light equals true makes new light false. So what do we need to do? There we go. If we just stick not in there, it does the right thing. It takes the input, turns it into the opposite, and now what we're going to do is to make this so that it's blinking over time, we're going to take new light, and on a 1 second delay, copy it back as the input to the same little logical function. So it's this light blue box, probably cyan, this cyan box is just sitting there waiting for information to come in one side, and whatever it does, it inverts it, sends it out the other side, which goes to the actual Christmas light, turns it on. But then, behind its back, that same information that it just sent out comes back in, and the cyan box says, ooh, look, input. And so it does the same thing again. It's like, oh, I'll just take that and invert it and send it along. It just does this, you know, it does all night long, and it creates, you know, the effect of a blinking light. Now, I don't want to say that this is how all Christmas lights actually really work, but in terms of logically as a state machine, that's really what they're doing. They're taking the state of the light and inverting it with a knob. So here's what we're going to do. I've got a program that lets us type in logical expressions for when the light should be on as a function of how they were before, and then animates it for us. So, let's give this a whirl. If all goes well, we should have the program up and running in a moment. Okay, there we go. All right. So this is our our little Christmas light state machine. The state machine itself has, a moment ago, we just had the one setting, the old light, which we turned to new light. We've now got 3 state variables. We call them A, B, and C. And this is the old value of A, which we can then turn into a new value of A. We've got an old value of B, which we can turn into a new value of B, an old value of C, which we can turn into a new value of C, and then we've got 8 lights, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, each of which can be on or off at any given moment as a function of A, B, and C. So let's do this. At the moment, they're all set to false, but let's set the first one to A,
And let's set A to true. So now what we've done is we've taken this state variable and said, the new value of the state variable, it should always be on. And this Christmas light here, we say, it should be on or off depending on what A is. If A is on, this light should be on. If A is off, this light should be off. Okay, so far so good. In fact, let's make all the Christmas lights depend on the A state variable. You can see they're all going on. Each one has its own color. The color doesn't matter. It's either on or off. On means it comes on whatever the color is, and off means it goes white. Okay. So now what we're going to do is try that idea out that we had a second ago. We're going to set A to not A. Alright, so what's going on here? So B and C are always false, but the new value of A, we're saying, take whatever this is the new value of A, should be whatever the old value of A is, negated. And what that causes, ignore the Christmas lights for a second, just watch A. It's going on, off, on, off. So A is just flipping its value each time, each second. It's flipping its value. And all the Christmas lights are just obeying A. All right, so let's think about this for a moment. What if we wanted the Christmas lights, there's a nice pattern that goes like this. The odd ones are on, then the even ones are on. The odd ones are on, then the even ones are on. So it's sort of blinking like that. What small change can we make to our circuit design here so that half the lights are on, and then 1 second later, the other half of lights go on, and then 1 second later, the other lights, so they keep flicking back and forth like that. I'll give you a hint. We don't have to mess with A. Let's just leave A as it is. But let's change this light here. When should this be on? This should be on whenever the other one is off, and vice versa. So let's just make this not A. Let's see what happens. In fact, we'll do this with make all the odd ones not, or A, and all the even ones not A. Alright? So first of all, appreciate the beauty of it. Second of all, try to understand what's going on, logically or mathematically. Is any questions about this? Here's the kind of question that I'd really like you guys to ask now. What would happen if I changed bleh to bleh? Right? What would happen if I changed that not A to B? Or what would happen if I changed the value for B to be A or not A? Let's ask some questions about this so that we can really get a sense of what's going on, and then we can work up to doing more complicated things, like light patterns that go, more than just a pattern with size 2, maybe we can get a pattern of size 3 going. All right, so, hit me. I mean, the good thing about having a live demo like this is you can actually ask me what-if questions, and I can answer them and show you what they actually do. Otherwise, you're just sitting listening to me blab on and on. All right, go ahead.
So if you alternate, do like A, B, and C on like the different like lights, like light number 1 is A, light number 2 is B, light number 3 is C.
Okay.
And you make them all true, does that mean that all just keep going up in like progressive downward motion?
Okay, we can try that. So the first one, A, that's not good. First one A, second one B, third one C, like that. Okay? Is that good? All right, now we set these guys to true.
So they all be going at the same time, right?
Let's see what happens. So we've set A, B, and C to have value true. That means they're always on. This light is on whenever A is on, which is always. This light is on whenever B is on, which is always. So this isn't quite what you were wanting.
No. Is it possible to make it like C is equal to not B?
I don't know. Let's see what happens.
Absolutely nothing.
No, not absolutely nothing. It did something, right? Look what it did. What is the current value of C? Is C on or off?
On.
I heard both of them. It's off, right? C is currently off. Why is it off? Well, C has whatever the opposite of B is, and B is on. So B is always on, C is always the opposite, which means it's always off. So that's something. Yeah, in the top.
What
if we make A not B?
A is not C.
A is not C.
And then
B. Not A. And that not B. All right, what the heck's happening now?
Badness.
Yeah. It's something crazy. It's something crazy. Can we figure this out? Does this make sense? It's complete chaos. In fact, it cannot be complete chaos. And I'll explain why. It can't be random. A, B, and C, how many different patterns of values can A, B, and C have? A can be on or off, B can be on or off, and C can be on or off. Wait, how many total patterns is that? There's three reasonable guesses. Three, which is wrong. Six, which is wrong. Nine, which is wrong. Eight? Why would it be eight?
Oh, it's 2 to the 3rd.
Yeah, but why is it 2 to the 3rd? Yeah, 8 is 2 to the 3rd. I get that. But why is that the right answer to this question? So A can be on or off. So there's two possibilities there. B can be on or off with, you know, while each of those is on or off. So that's 2 times 2. And then there's a third one. So it's 2 times 2 times 2. So there are, in fact, exactly 8 different patterns that A, B, and C can have jointly. For each of those, there's exactly one pattern that will come out as the output of this. So each of those 8 patterns will lead to some other one of those 8 patterns. So if you think about that, at most, it can go in a pattern of, the values can go in a pattern of 8. But generally, it's going to be less than that. In fact, in this case, let's write down what it's doing. Actually, I've never seen this particular bit of craziness before. So, all right, so we've got A and B on and C off. A and B on and C off. I'll write off by putting a bar over it. All right, what comes after that?
A and C moving.
A and B on and C. Oh, darn, I missed it.
Then A is on C.
Then what happened in the next? Well, we can actually figure it out from the logical expression.
A on B and C off.
So if C was off, then A will be on again. B is the opposite of A, so B will go off. And C is the opposite of B, so C will still be off. Right? Yeah, all right, so that's the next pattern. So where does it go from here? From here, A is the opposite of C, so A is going to stay on. B is the opposite of A, so B is going to stay off. And C is the opposite of B, so C is going to go on. So we get a new pattern. All right, where does it go from here? A is opposite of C, so A goes off. B is the opposite of A, so B stays off. C is the opposite of B, was it? So it stays on. Okay. This is kind of crazy. All right, next time through. A is the opposite of C, so it stays on.